From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This month saw the beginning of the seventh year of fighting in Syria. The ongoing fighting in the Syrian Arab Republic was the topic of discussion at the UN Security Council, beginning with this report delivered by the Special Envoy on Syria, Stefan de Mistura, to the UN Security Council Monday.
Dear colleagues, when I briefed you in April, we together saw two paths ahead. Either international escalation and internal escalation and deeper intra-Syrian conflict, or international dialogue, cooperation on de-escalation and de-escalating the tensions and moving on the political track, even by small steps, but moving. So far, there are signs that we have taken together the last course. Our common job now is to turn that into something truly more meaningful, both on the ground and on the political track. In the beginning of May, I attended the high-level Astana meeting to stress that any attempt to de-escalate violence is indeed what the Syrians want, and it is indeed vital in itself and can mutually support Geneva as Geneva mutually supports Astana. In Astana, my team gave technical support to the ceasefire guarantors, Russia, Turkey, and Iran. And I was active in political consultations with all of them and with the Syrian parties and with Jordan and the United States, who were present as observers. Astana produced, in my modest opinion, a promising step. Indeed, a promising step. A memorandum between the three guarantors on the creation of de-escalation zones took place. The reports which I received so far indicate a significant drop in violence, including in aerial bombing, in most of the areas identified by the memorandum. UN contacts on the ground have described, I would say, tangible change, clear skies and areas quickly to come back to life. That's typical of the Syrian reality. Whenever there is a moment of peace, or at least of stopping of the fighting, they take their own future in and their own present in hand. Including markets started functioning anew in those locations. We welcome this, and efforts of the Astana guarantors should be praised because we want them to succeed. And I thank the Kazakh government for ably hosting the Astana meetings. That is the good news. There is also not so good news. Despite the nationwide ceasefire, which was announced last December, and the de-escalation zones that now are being created to deepen that effort, we have received reports of ongoing hostilities and even bombardment between the government and armed opposition groups in areas such as Hama, Homs, and Damascus. Some of these areas appear to be outside of the current de-escalation zones. However, as you know, their precise areas and ambit will only become clear when the guarantors complete what is an extremely important process, the so-called mapping process. These clashes resulted in another evacuation of armed opposition fighters and civilians from areas of eastern Damascus city, which are called Barzakh and Kabun. Separately, following the memorandum, we saw some government attacks on armed opposition groups who were otherwise engaged in fighting Daesh in the desert near Homs and Al-Suwaida. While we have registered that the government of Syria has made some significant advances against Daesh, we also note with great concern the continued activities of Security Council-listed terrorist groups. We condemn in particular the ISIL attack on civilians in rural Salamia last week on a very important and small community which has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and the ISIL assault on the Deir ez-Zor city, which is still ongoing today. These incidents show that despite losing further territory this month, ISIL, still Daesh, has the capacity to cause great harm. We are also aware of the reports that the anti-ISIL coalition has carried out strikes on armed convoy, which allegedly was composed of forces of the Syrian government and its allies in the desert east of Homs. I'm also encouraged by the recent government of Syria and AOG's agreements, which are resulting in the release of some detainees and abducted people. All these facts remind us that there are still important details to clarify to ensure full implementation of the Astana Memorandum by all parties. We therefore should together urge the ceasefire guarantors to address those details quickly, diligently, and fairly within the time frame stipulated by themselves in the memorandum. All relevant international actors, specifically regional ones, as well as the ISSG co-chairs, have a particular interest in this regard. The UN remains ready to provide its technical expertise. Our goal is not just the escalation, but actually, at least on the military side, the realization of the nationwide ceasefire. And therefore, we do have a common interest in ensuring that no party of the conflict takes advantage of any ambiguity which is still happening to take place or existing in the memorandum, in order to make sure that the memorandum can be implemented fully. We urge all the parties, the Astana guarantors, and those who have an influence on the parties, to take steps to ensure rapid, safe, unhindered humanitarian access to the more than 4.5 million people in need in areas hard to reach and besieged. When there is a reduction of violence, that should be the first consequence, the first secondary positive effect. We are not seeing enough of that. The UN stands ready to respond to any opportunity for increased humanitarian access based on the needs of the people and in line with international humanitarian law. Finally, regarding Astana, we were encouraged to note that the guarantors seriously engaged in discussions on two additional, for us and for the Syrians, important subjects: detainees, abductees, missing people, and humanitarian demining. Indeed, on detainees, they finalized at the technical level an agreement on a process for addressing the issue, in which the UN would be closely involved, and we are ready and willing to do so. I have urged, therefore, the Astana guarantors in writing to formally confirm as soon as possible that technical agreement without delay. Meanwhile, the UN Mine Action Service, which is based in New York, which was part of the UN team in Astana, is indeed ready to do its part to advance an effective approach to humanitarian demining in Syria. Mr. President, in the immediate aftermath of Astana, I invited the parties of the intra-Syrian talks to a sixth round in Geneva. And they all came, and they met in a proximity format. The round was kept short so as to proceed in a focused manner. 4 days, but intense, including with one case of night-evening discussions. In the previous round, the parties had already begun to engage in substance. Across all the four baskets of the agenda that this council, yourselves, had approved after the fourth round. They also had, in the previous case, showed that the process is now facing fewer obstacles related to possible walkouts, procedural objections, long statements attacking each other, or even questioning of the other side's legitimacy. We strongly insisted on that, and we got that. There are, of course, major gaps still, I'm not denying it, between the parties. But we had also seen a deepening of the process across the baskets and a greater understanding of what is required if the parties are to succeed in negotiating a framework for a transitional political agreement that safeguards sovereignty, unity, territorial integrity and independence of Syria based on the Geneva Communique and on Resolution 2254 adopted by all of you. I assessed that the parties needed to be ready to roll up their sleeves. We had only 4 days, let's make good use of it, and go even deeper. Specifically, I saw an opportunity and a need to increase focus through and work on the constitutional and legal dimensions of the talks as the talks proceed. Everything is touched by that. Every question which comes up has either a constitutional or a legal aspect. Why not going deeper? Why not prepare it before that? I think we can all agree that no stakeholder, Syrian, regional, or international, will accept any constitutional or legal or institutional vacuum in Syria before, during, or after any negotiated transitional political process. So at least on that we all, I believe, agreed. Most importantly, that process needed to be owned and needs to be owned by the Syrians. They are the ones who should be drafting their own constitution, but we can help in preparing the ground for it. Therefore, to this end, I informed the parties that I intended to establish a technical consultative process to move more deeply and examine more deeply relevant constitutional and legal issues raised within the formal sessions. In other words, sessions remain formal, but can't we go a little bit deeper, especially when the subject can have common ground? Can't we prepare better for the time when there will be a peace conference and many of those issues could have been at least more or less, if not sorted out, at least prepared? I share, therefore, initial ideas with the participants in the talks, sketching out a possible vision for this type of approach. This stimulated a very intense and indeed, in my opinion, valuable discussions and many constructive, oral and written, observations from the parties. We met the sides day and the evening to answer their queries and urge them to indicate the basis of their own participation in the expert consultative process. This enabled us to move beyond the paper and the initial set of ideas we had prepared and focus on the real deliverable, which was establishing a consultative process at the technical level as an additional effective new tool and piece of architecture in the intra-Syrian talks process. Participants wasted no time and agreed that the two separate technical meetings with experts from my own team on the 19th of May, one with experts from the government, who until then had been hesitating about entering into some type of expert groups, and one with experts from the delegation of the Syrian opposition, the one announced on the 11th of February. Two further technical expert meetings were also held under the consultative process on 19 May with the Cairo and the Moscow platforms separately. The meetings were businesslike, constructive, informative. We can now say that the process is up and running, and it has already shown its own potential. We also had constructive discussions on trying to find a formula by which experts from the Cairo and Moscow platforms might join at least the expert meetings of the Syrian opposition delegation, the one announced in their own composition on the 11th of February. Intensive conversations took place on this within the main opposition and between it and other platforms, and we should encourage them to make this a reality during the next round. This would send an important new signal of opposition unity. As you know, the opposition, as mentioned by the Security Council, indicates that I should be inviting the HNC, the Cairo, and the Moscow platform. And we have all been hoping and thinking that one day, at least on some technical areas, this could be the beginning of them having a common umbrella of ideas. It might be a step, in fact, towards a common understanding initially on some of the issues. And international and regional actors, like yourself, in my opinion, should do everything they can to support it so that we do have a unified opposition as soon as possible. And while it is not an immediate prospect, which we do realize, the proof is that we could not see that happening immediately, we hope this would take us closer to the possibility for direct negotiations between government and opposition. I would like to thank once again the Women's Advisory Board, who have been providing valuable feedback on the UN's proposal on a technical consultation process. In fact, they came up with many valid ideas that we were able to use, as well as timely and constructive suggestions on the process at large, with a view to making it as inclusive as possible for all Syrians, men and women alike. Separately, I'm starting engagement in a series of in-depth consultations with the representatives of the Syrian civil society. They are important. They're important particularly when we get a point like we are now. And those consultations which have already provided us with a lot of insightful and practical advice. And finally, I would like to acknowledge with appreciation the support of the members of this council, those who were all present and active here in Geneva, the International Syrian Support Group, and other countries that all have dispatched their own senior officials or Syria envoys in Geneva during the talks. Their close involvement and efforts in consulting with me and engaging the sides in order to make them actually closer to a possible formula remain an invaluable tool of diplomatic leverage for my own mediation. And also took welcome note of the fact that no matter what side of the conflict each of the groups have been closer to, they have been all welcoming a proactive UN making some concrete proposals to the parties and supporting those proposals. Before closing, please let me add a few important points of clarification on the expert meetings, to be clear about what they are and what they are not, and importantly, what the link with the four baskets is and could be. First, these expert meetings are not intended to replace the formal negotiations. This process is intended to support the four baskets and the principle of parallelism, which remain the focus of the agenda of the talks. We agreed on that. The work of these experts remain fully framed within the terms of reference, which we all know for the intra-Syrian talks. We were not able to go in depth on the four baskets during this round, but we did talk about important issues for both parties, and we hope to address those further in the substance during the next rounds. Second, Our focus on constitutional legal issues does not in any way take away the Syrian people's right to draft and determine their own constitutional future. We are not seeking to draft a new Syrian constitution in Geneva or in Astana or anywhere else, I want to believe. We are laying instead foundation for the time when the Syrians can do that. But in Geneva, yes, the UN is ready to help in preparing the ground for that, because there is a lot of homework to be done. Third, any framework agreement that is legally and constitutionally solid would require important technical underpinnings and details. We hope that the experts can work through those details together or separately, continuously. In this regard, I've also strongly encouraged the experts to have meetings in between the rounds of the Geneva talks and not just during the talks, although if anyone wants to meet only during the talks, he or she is welcome. The experts will not take any decisions, but rather propose options, but solid options, well-thought options, well-discussed options to the official participants in the formal talks. Naturally, there is still a great deal of work to be done. We are aware that important gaps remain between the parties on major issues. But having established an agenda and gone into substance on all baskets, and we now have taken a new further step in preparing the ground for a real negotiation, which I hope will be possible before not too long. For the first time, we have received the consent of all parties to engage with us on an expert, solid, concrete level. I'm also pleased that all parties were receptive to the UN convening a seventh round, which we intend to target sometime in June. The United Nations has in Geneva begun, Mr. President, to help the Syrian parties to put together building blocks in place for a real negotiation on a real political solution, while we hope Astana will contribute in making sure that the de-escalation works. And several important meetings of key international and regional leaders in recent weeks, and while we are also talking, taking place and will be taking place in various capitals, they all have produced some important statements on the need to find a political solution in Syria. And we are, with your help and Secretary General's guidance, doing our part for incrementally find a political agreed framework as per 2254. Thank you.
Bolivia's permanent representative responded to the report by Special Envoy de Mistura. This is the statement that was delivered by Bolivia's permanent representative, Sasha Sergio Laurenti Solis, through an interpreter.
Bolivia would like to thank the Special Envoy of the United Nations Organization in Syria, Mr. Stefan de Mistura, for his report. We express our support for him in the tasks that have been confided in him. We celebrate the sixth round of talks held in Geneva last week on the points in the four baskets: governance, constitution, elections, and counterterrorism. And we also highlight the willingness which the parties involved have demonstrated. We also commend the leadership shown by the Special Envoy by managing the establishment of an additional mechanism to strengthen the peace talks by opening a space where experts can meet on legal and constitutional measures which can support the political dialogue in Syria. We also highlight and praise the major step forward taken by the ceasefire guarantors, Russia, Iran, and Turkey, during the Astana meeting on May 4th of this year, where four areas have been created to prevent incidents and avoid any kind of armed confrontation, and as well as improving the unconditional deployment of humanitarian assistance and creating favorable conditions to make progress towards a political solution of the conflict in the Syrian Arab Republic. This achievement strengthens the guidelines of resolutions 2254 and 2336, which have been recognized by the Secretary General through his press statement of May 4th as an encouraging measure. We see with great hope that the parties involved, the regional actors and the ceasefire guarantors, are conducting specific actions to strengthen the path towards the political dialogue and keep the ceasefire, which has been the most long-lasting one since the beginning of the conflict and has stable because of the joint efforts of Russia, Iran, Turkey, and Kazakhstan. We encourage the parties to the conflict to definitely lay down their weapons and drop any belligerent stand, because the only alternative to resolve this conflict is through a political process. Mr. President, despite this remarkable process, there are still unilateral actions which are completely illegal, affecting not only the stability of the political process and the agreements that have been achieved to strengthen it, but also attacking the sovereignty and integrity of the Syrian Arab Republic and going against the efforts its government is making in its struggle against Daesh. We reiterate and stress that we should not allow unilateral actions which go against the Charter of the United Nations to be an obstacle to the reaching peace in Syria, to the detriment of its inhabitants, all the more so when these actions are taken by actors which are outside the process of political dialogue. Lastly, Mr. President, we express our support for continued dialogue both in Geneva in June and in Astana in July, and the result, which would be a process led by and for the Syrian people with respect for the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity. Thank you very much.
And on Tuesday, Izumi Nakamitsu, the UN's Undersecretary General and High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, delivered this report to the Security Council.
Regarding a reported incident in Hanshikun on 4th of April this year, after having undertaken a preliminary assessment, an FFM team was mobilized to investigate the incident. The team was deployed to a neighboring country wherein it conducted interviews with casualties and witnessed the collection of biomedical samples from casualties from the alleged incident. The team also received biological environmental samples from dead animals reported to have been close to the site of the incident, and received environmental samples from close to the suspected impact point. The team attended the autopsies of three alleged victims, witnessed the extraction of biomedical samples from those bodies, and received the autopsy reports. As the Director General has announced already, the analysis of samples showed exposure to sarin or sarin-like substance. This is not a final report. There is still work to be done. We must not allow ourselves to become inured to the ongoing allegations of the use of chemical weapons. This is an issue about which the United Nations cannot be neutral. The use of chemical weapons by any party, government forces, terrorist groups, or armed opposition groups for that matter, cannot be and will not be justified, regardless of provocation or any circumstances. As such, this is not an issue to be politicized. International community must have confidence that this goal is one that remains within our reach, and that those who stand in its way will be identified and held accountable. Its importance is greater than ever. Thank you very much for your attention.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.